We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? This special episode of the Bronx Pinstripe Show is an interview we did with Clint Frazier back in November 2016. So if you remember, at the end of that season, Frazier came over for the Andrew Miller trade mid-year, spent some time with the Rail Riders. They actually won the championship that year, and Frazier was the hot prospect in Yankees' system. It was him and Gleyber Torres that came over at the trade deadline, and we were really just looking towards the future at that point. Who knew the future would come so damn fast with everything that happened in 2017? But this when we spoke with him back in 2016, obviously the podcast wasn't as well known out there. We didn't have as many listeners, so maybe a lot of people missed it. But people also weren't that familiar with Clint Frazier at that point. So I know it was awesome for Scott and I to talk to him. One thing that stood out to us was, I mean, he was just an awesome dude. He was stuck in traffic. We had like a set time to record. He was stuck in traffic. He messaged us. He's like, oh, I'm stopping over at my buddy's house. I'm going to jump on Skype there. And he gave us like close to an hour. It was like 50-something minutes. So enjoy this interview coming up. I think it's a good flashback. And hopefully, we don't know, there's a lot of rumors with Clint Frazier in the news lately. He might be getting flipped to Pittsburgh for Gerrit Cole, but hopefully Clint Frazier's on this team for the long haul, because I know Scott and I both really enjoyed talking to him. Hey, yo, to me, freedom is the feeling of an ocean breeze. East Coast, North Carolina, got a potent steeze. From the oak leaves out to the open sea, see it like oak leaves, then I let it go with ease. They say I'm gifted with it, I just say I'm different with it. Clint Frazier, you all know who he is. He will be joining us in just a few minutes. Scott, we just wrapped up an interview with him, and it was freaking awesome.
Yeah, I tell you, it was so much fun. When just looking back now, and while we were in the middle of it, you can tell that this guy just gets it. He's very laid back, extremely laid back, and he's pretty much an open book. I mean, he's a lot of fun to talk to. You can tell that he appreciates the fans, and he wants all of our, you know, the Yankees fan base to get to know who he is, because he's got confidence in himself and he knows he's going to be around for a while. So it was a really fun conversation.
Yeah, we talked about a ton of stuff, anywhere from how his offseason is going, the instructional league that he was playing in, what it was like for him to get traded at the deadline, his mindset going into that. He told some fun stories about Reggie Jackson, which you and I got a pretty big kick out of, because it touches on something that we talked about a few weeks ago.
We should tell them. It touches on frozen yogurt, of all things. I mean, if you listened to last week's episode and you heard, I think it was last week when we read the review about the frozen yogurt, I forget who it was. He even hit us up on Twitter. You got to listen to this. It's unbelievable. It's phenomenal.
And we talked about the World Series. He was obviously pulling for the Indians. He said he had a lot of friends on that team, so he was pretty nervous watching that. And then we asked him some of the fan questions too. So all in all, a great interview. If you guys are listening to this, make sure to go over to iTunes and give us a review and a rating. Hopefully you enjoy the episode. You give it 5 stars, and we want to keep pumping up those ratings. So I am continuing to tweet those out, and we'll read some of those next week. And we'll also get to some of the email questions that you guys submitted for this week's episode. This is just going to be an interview with Clint, since it went about an hour. So we figure we'll just have this week's episode be our interview. But hope you guys enjoy it, and we'll talk to you next week. And now we're welcoming on Yankees prospect Clint Frazier. Clint, thanks for joining us. What's up?
I'm just hanging out at my friend's house right now, man. What about you?
Yeah, we heard on your way to your friend's house, I heard you hit some traffic. We were a little bit delayed here, but that's all good that you were able to join us. That Atlanta traffic is a bitch, huh?
Yeah, man, it's different. I just moved down here this month after Instruction League. I bought a house. I got two friends living with me out here, so... I'm in Athens, Georgia right now. So my old college town that I was supposed to go to. So I'm going back there tonight.
So you bought a house and you have two buddies living with you?
Yeah. I bought a house down in Buckhead, Georgia, if you ever heard of that. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, tough life you got going. So
it's pretty enjoyable.
Now you're from that area, right? You're from the Atlanta area?
I'm about an hour outside of Atlanta. Yeah.
Okay.
Now I'm 10 minutes from the airport. So that helps a lot.
So yeah, awesome. You said the college you were supposed to go to. So it sounds like you're doing college just a couple years late.
I'm enjoying college without class.
That's I'm enjoying all the good parts.
Yeah, I've made some friends down here, so it's pretty fun to keep coming back every now and then.
Nice. That's funny because I did college without going to class too. It was very similar.
Yeah, and look where it's led you.
Yeah, look where it's led me.
So how's the first off season as a New York Yankee going?
It's good, man. You know, this year was a lot of change. So for the season to, you know, come to an end and me to be able to come back home and kind of decompress and kind of sit back and take in what happened this year, it's been good. I mean, it was a lot of change for me. So for me to finally get some downtime and enjoy it with my friends and family is what I needed this year. So I think this is my favorite offseason so far.
Yeah, so you're with the Cleveland Indians. Obviously, now they just made the World Series. So every fan in America knows about the Indians. But you get traded to the New York Yankees, the most famous franchise in sports. I mean, that's got to turn your life upside down right there. All of a sudden, you've got people on Twitter blowing you up. Prospects in the Yankees organization are treated a little bit different than I think probably other organizations. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, when I got traded, it was completely unexpected. I mean, I had just gotten promoted to AAA. My roommate was Bradley Zimmer, who was another top prospect for the Indians. And, you know, we started hearing that the Lucroy deal with the Brewers was going to go through. And both of us just kept checking our phone, like, seeing like, hey, one of us might be involved. Let's keep our phones on just in case. And then they said they traded the guys, and neither one of us were in it. We're like, all right, we made it. Let's go to sleep. And I get up the next morning to go to the bathroom at like 8:40 in the morning, and I got a text from a good friend of mine, and all it said was, let's effing go. And it was a screenshot of Buster Olney's tweet saying I got traded, and I was like, what is that? He called me.
You found that on Twitter or through a buddy rather than the organization?
Yeah. So,
Oh, my God. I can't imagine that.
So then the farm director from the Indians called me shortly after, and then I was like, wow. You know, like, I called my mom and was like, I just got traded. And she was like, no, you didn't. Like, I was like, I got traded. Like, you need to turn the TV on right now. I'm SportsCenter. And luckily at the time, my family was in North Carolina watching me play. My agent was there. So I had all those people in place to, you know, kind of help me realize what just happened. So it was definitely a unique situation to be in.
Yeah, so that was your second go-around as a minor leaguer at the trade deadline. What is it, just nervous energy the whole time for all the minor league guys during that time?
I didn't think it was that nerve-wracking. I mean, there was some stuff that started happening for me to kind of realize, like, there's a chance that I might get traded. Like, for instance, we had the coolest double-A coach in minor league baseball, if you ask me, like, would let us hit BP in tank tops sometimes. So never had to wear, like, a BP top with a jersey on it. So as the trade deadline starts coming around, he starts saying, guys, we need to put the BP tops on for the numbers. And then, and he goes, don't worry, Fred, you're good. Like, everyone knows your hair. So then the Yankee scouts start showing up, and they're at every game. And I'm seeing the same ones there. And he just starts preparing me. He's like, dude, we don't know what happened. It could happen. You never know what's going to happen in this situation. And he said, you're playing for all the organizations right now. I mean, scouts are coming out looking at guys, and I never thought it would be me. But when me and Bradley got promoted on the same day, that's when I was like, something's going on, man. Like, we just both got promoted at the same time. All these scouts are everywhere, and then it was me. So I was like, whatever. I mean, I'm playing still, so I'm good.
So does that make it different for you when you know the scouts are in the stands and you're trying to show off basically for another team and not one that's seen you the entire time you've been in the minors? Does that change your mindset at all when you're approaching your games?
No, not for me. I mean, as the trade deadline was coming to an end, I was struggling. I just lost my timing. I just could not time pitches up, and I was more frustrated with my performance rather than word on who was watching, because I started out the season really hot, and then reality kicked in. I started to struggle. I felt like a human being for once, and I kind of went in this like blackout mode where I just didn't know what was going on. And the trade deadline starts coming to an end, but I wasn't worried about other teams. I mean, at the time, I had a Cleveland Indian logo on my jersey. I wasn't really worried about anyone else. Just because you don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to be a GM and predict what's going to happen.
Right.
That's probably a good approach to take. Just worry about what you can control on the field and not try and worry about all that extra shit. Because I feel like you'd drive yourself crazy if you tried to follow along with what the organization was doing the entire time.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason that there's another guy that's a GM and I'm not a GM. I mean, I'm not trying to play his role. You never know. I mean, you think you know, and then you don't know. So it's a nerve-wracking game if you let it be that way.
Yeah, so not only for that, it's going to be a good approach taking that type of mental approach when you do get to the Yankees and you deal with the New York media and you're dealing with a lot of stuff. I mean, there are going to be things that are going to be coming at you. You know that. I mean, I'm sure everybody you get prepped for the New York media and all those things, but you can only control what you can control. So. I'm actually curious about how, when you did get into that hole and you said, this is the first time you really struggled in your career. How'd you end up coming out of it?
I don't really think I ever came out of it.
Really?
I don't think that I really found myself after the trade, because there was times when I was like, I feel good. And then there was times where I was like, I'm not even a baseball player right now. Like, that's how bad I look at the plate. And I think what made me struggle more was I started to press. I started to try things that I didn't do before and see if they would work. In reality, like, I was too deep in the season to try and start new things. What I had done prior to this struggle was things that helped me be successful. And I kind of lost sight of that. So when I pulled my hamstring again for the second time, I honestly think that was a good thing for me, because it gave I can't breathe right now. That's how much pressure I'm putting on myself to perform. It's not what other people were saying. It was just the level of play I was used to. And I didn't feel like I could get back to that, because I was going out of my way to do new things. And once the playoffs came around, I started to hit again. I started to, you know, get a little hot towards the end of it and feel like myself again.
Yeah. So let's talk about the playoffs. I mean, you guys won. You come over to a new organization and you're instantly put into the Triple A championship. That's got to be pretty unbelievable. But what was it like in that locker room? I mean, you guys were without Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez, Rob Refsnyder was up in the majors as well. I mean, those are three key guys. They were all performing at the major league level. How, you know, what was the atmosphere like in the minor league locker room? And you guys seemed to just keep winning even without those guys.
It was a very relaxed environment. You know, that started with our manager, Al Padrique. I mean, he knows what he's doing. He knows how to handle an environment like that. A lot of guys have played in the big leagues before. So he made showing up to the field a fun experience, but a work experience. He found a way to combine those two and make sure that we enjoyed the day. And, you know, when we lose those guys, it sucks. But, dude, it felt like we had guys that just, like, filled roles when they left. I was like, I don't know where these guys are coming from. I've never even seen them play before. Like, they're coming up from Double A, and I was like, I don't know who this is, but he balls, man. Like, so it was just like these guys that didn't have the prospect title that Aaron Judge and all of them had, and they were really good. Like, I don't know how to explain it, man. This is the best organization and group of guys I've ever seen so far all together.
So you guys win the championship. What's the celebration like?
Man, we had so many celebrations. I feel like I can't even drink any wine right now because I have the smell of the champagne, like, embedded in that smell. Like, that's how much champagne we popped over the course of the season. But it was fun. I mean, it was just a group of guys that, you know, deserved every bit of the success that they had during the season. I mean, I wasn't there through the whole thing, but a lot of guys were, so to kind of put the cherry on top of their season for them was a sweet experience to be a part of. I mean, I got three rings this year. The Double A team I was with won it all. The Triple A team won it. And then we won the national championship. So overall, I was surrounded by a lot of really good players. So it was a really fun experience.
Yeah, I mean, you came from an organization that ended up in the World Series, and you went to an organization that has World Series aspirations every year. And like you just said, you ended up with three rings. You know, were any of the guys that any of the, you know, Gary Sanchez or Tyler Austin, Aaron Judge, they give you a call after you guys won, or have you seen them since?
I've seen Judge. He was down in Tampa when I was there for Instruction League, and I was more curious to talk to him about his big league experience. I mean, that's everybody's goal. So I just kept asking a lot of questions on, you know, what the transition was like and, you know, how he's feeling with the injury that he was going through. But I mean, I played against Tyler Austin in high school, so him and I are not too far from each other.
Oh, no shit, huh?
Wow. Yeah. So Tyler was a senior and I was a freshman. So I got to see Tyler when he was younger and got to be around through the cancer struggle that he had too. I mean, so we're not too far from each other. We're only, I think on a map, we're only probably 15 miles from each other.
Wow. So Scott and I were at the game that Judge and Austin debuted and hit those back-to-back home runs. And I saw you tweet about it. What was it, you know, what was it like watching that? That was one of the crazier debuts for in MLB history, I'm sure.
It was awesome, man. I mean, the way that I look at it is Tyler Austin's a really good guy. I mean, you to see kind of what he's gone through, kind of knowing his high school background when I was around during that time, and to see all the stuff that he's gone through in his minor league career to get to this point and have that kind of jumpstart to his career in the big leagues was awesome. I mean, I was really happy for him. And, you know, Aaron Judge is like the scariest looking guy ever, but he's the nicest guy I've ever met. So to see two guys come into the league and show guys what they can do right off the bat was awesome. I mean, they deserve everything that they have come their way that enables them to have success.
You're talking about the instructional league and going down to Tampa and working out with some of these guys. What else were, you know, tell us a little bit more about that instructional league. And I mean, obviously you're picking Judge's brain about the, you know, his experience from going from Scranton to the Bronx, or what else were you guys doing down there? And, you know, what other, I guess, Yankee alumni was there helping you, you know, coaching you up and doing all those things, working with the younger guys?
So I think for me, it was more of a, let's get to know this guy a little bit, kind of see what he uses in his everyday routine and just to, you know, kind of see what kind of player he is up close. I mean, there was a lot of guys that came through Scranton when I was there in that short period of time, and there was a ton that I didn't get to meet. So, you know, I think I was there to kind of develop some relationships and just let these guys, you know, what I like to do. So, you know, I got to meet Alex Rodriguez, Andy Pettit, Alfonso Serrano, Hideki Matsui. I knew Swisher from the past, but he was down there. And probably the coolest one was Reggie Jackson. So, I mean, I got to be pretty close with Reggie towards the end of it. Him and I were hitting in the cage every single day. It's actually like a weird, funny story. I mean, I was starting to get frustrated towards the end of instructional league. I think I was just more of a – I still was not putting the results together that I wanted. And I was just like, dude, this is just ridiculous. I don't know what's going on. Reggie pulls me aside and says, "You're riding back with me. You're not riding the bus." And I was like, "All right, like, I don't know what this is going to be, but I'll do it." And I get in his car and we're just talking, and he stops and we get frozen yogurt. And I was like, I'm in my full uniform still. So it was like a little kid showing up to the field in his uniform. And, you know, Reggie's walking around and we're getting frozen yogurt and we just ride back. And I was like, how many other guys get to say they got frozen yogurt with Reggie Jackson? Like,
it is so weird you just said that.
Because that is incredible. I'm so happy you just said
that. We've been pubbing our iTunes rankings, and we want people to comment on the show. And a couple weeks ago, we got a comment of someone saying he met Reggie Jackson once, and he was angry because the stand at the stadium they were at didn't have frozen yogurt. All they had was ice cream, and he got pissed off at the people. So this dude really does love frozen yogurt.
Oh, dude, he loves it. I mean, Reggie's an animal. I mean, he's one of my favorite people. I mean, the guy he's so full of knowledge in every way. And, you know, to get to experience kind of that one-on-one action with him is good. I mean, he's the best. And I was very thankful to, you know, kind of get to pick his brain on a personal level and, you know, just be around him every day.
That's awesome. I mean, that says something about you too, obviously. I mean, Reggie saw something and singled you out to come ride with him. So he obviously sees a lot of promise. That's awesome. We had actually, when you got traded, right after you got traded, I spoke with Jim Fander, the AA GM in Akron, and he was talking about, you know, just what a, how all about baseball. That was one of the biggest things, I think, the takeaway was just that baseball is life for you. I mean, is that still the case? I mean, obviously, you know, you're a young guy coming up through the system and there's distractions everywhere, but it seems like your head is like just completely in the books of the game of baseball.
Yeah. I mean, so when I was younger, obviously I loved playing the game and I'm still trying to continue to keep that same fire and desire for the game. You know, I mean, it's anytime I start to get frustrated, I try to think to myself, like, how much fun I used to have when I was a kid playing this game. And if I can emulate that feeling again and not take it as a job and just still go out there and have fun. I mean, part of my goal is this, is I'm put in a position to where I can impact people's lives. And that's not just on the field. It's off the field as well. And kind of the title that I have from the hometown that I'm from has enabled me to kind of reach out to some people who, you know, might have needed something at the time and help them. And, you know, one of my goals is to retire my family when I'm done. I mean, my family went through a lot of struggles with, you know, financial stuff, and they're hurting for money. And, you know, I'm in a position to where I can, you know, kind of be that backbone and still get them through some bills that they need to pay. So my goal is to probably hand over my first year salary to him and just say, look, you're good. Like, I've got you.
That's awesome.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's obviously an awesome goal. It's a great goal. And I'm sure not every player your age and your skill level is thinking that way. And I'm sure your thinking like that will go a long way. Have you had any conversations with any of the guys maybe you met in instructional league, Reggie Jackson or A-Rod, about that whole thing and being able to manage that, not getting too far ahead of yourself?
You know, not with A-Rod. Me and him just had a brief conversation. He was in and out.
Yeah, he had to go do TV.
Yeah, he was on to other things. But, you know, Reggie and I, you know, we talked about some personal things with him and some personal things with myself, and, you know, kind of to live in the moment and, you know, not think too far ahead. I mean, I'm trying to keep my mind and my body in the same line right now. I'm not trying to get one ahead of the other. So I've got to get to the big leagues first. And, you know, that's a goal of mine. I got to get to the big leagues to be able to impact my family the way that I want to. So when that does happen, I'll be able to accomplish another goal of mine.
And just talking about that, you know, obviously nowadays with all the social media and all the access we have to you guys as minor league ball players, and we kind of touched on this, but when we had Ref Snyder on, he was talking about how crazy it is, the fanfare, and like how everybody knows everything about you before you even get to the big leagues. Like, is there a lot of pressure with that? I mean, just even getting there, you're getting put up and everybody's talking about what can happen, what will happen, what should happen. I mean, even before you step foot on the field in Yankee Stadium.
You know, I think pressure is what you allow it to be. And I'm not worried about filling somebody else's shoes right now. So what I mean by that is I'm trying to fill my own shoes. I'm trying to be the best that I can be. And, you know, when Andrew Miller was pitching, my Twitter just blew up every day. I mean, people are tweeting me saying, if you're not the next Mickey Mantle, we wasted Andrew Miller. And I'm thinking,
no pressure, kid. Jesus.
But yeah, but I took that. It was funny to me. I was like, these guys are grown men. Like, chirping at me when I'm in my off season right now, like it's like an honor to be traded for that guy. You shouldn't be trying to like put pressure on me. But I'm not worried about filling the role of what people expect me to be. I'm worried about being the best player that I can be. And I'm a human being. I'm going to go through struggles. I'm going to be terrible at times, but it's how I get out of that. I mean, I'm not going to let other people affect the way that I go on the field and play tentatively. I mean, play like a nervous player. So I'm going to, you know, continue to just kind of shut out that that or the negative distractions and just continue to play my game.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good way to handle it. I mean, what Andrew Miller was doing in the postseason was legendary. And yes, there was plenty of Yankee fans pissed off that the Yankees traded him because of what he was doing for Cleveland and what Chapman was doing for Chicago. I mean, they were both in the World Series. But you got to, we're thinking long term here for the Yankees. And obviously, there's going to be some idiots on social media who will chirp you. As soon as you were traded, Brian Cashman sort of talked about you and said that he was really impressed with your bat speed. And one of the things that allows you to do that is your massive forearms. You got any tips for me to like get better forearms? Because mine are not nearly as huge as yours.
So I've got no tips.
It's just natural, all natural.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing with me is I didn't start to like. I tell my friends in this all the time. I don't look in the mirror and see what they see. I look at myself every day and I see just, I don't think I'm big. I really don't. Like, I don't look in the mirror and think I'm this jacked guy like people put me out to be. So I didn't start to notice, like, one, I didn't notice how long my hair got till people started saying it. And I was like, holy shit, like my hair is long, or how big my forearms were until people kept pointing it out. So like what I see in the mirror every day is not what other people are seeing. So I just started to notice, like, once I got out, basically in the Futures game, when people just kept pointing it out in pictures, like, someone made the comment that my forearms are like watermelons with freckles on them. So it was just like...
It's a really good description, actually.
Yeah, I mean, people keep saying the same thing over and over again. I'm probably going to, you know, realize there might be some truth to that.
I mean, we saw you change your Instagram profile picture to that one that's just glowing with your forearm. So come on, you know what it is. And have you seen the famous picture of, there's a famous picture of Mickey Mantle where he throws his helmet back towards the, have you seen that picture? There's one of him. And that was one of the biggest things people would always talk about Mickey Mantle, not to compare you by any means again.
Yeah. We just talked about not comparing him to Mickey Mantle.
I'm just comparing the pictures. I'm just comparing forearms. Can we do that? The dude had like these massive forearms, but that, you know, I think strength in your arms and your hands are directly relevant with your bat speed. I mean, it's science. It's science. So, I mean, you got to contribute your strength, your upper body strength to that bat speed, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if either of you have seen me in person, but I'm not that big. So I'm not that tall. I mean, I think the internet says I'm 6'1". I'm not even close to that. I'm 5'10", maybe 5'11". That I might be pushing it. It depends if my hair is out or not. But I attribute a lot of that to my weight room routine. I mean, I work out really hard, and I look at the difference in a guy like Aaron Judge, who has the height difference, and he has that leverage in his swing. Like I feel like I have to create that leverage just by being strong. You know what I mean? Like, my strength is a big part of my game, so I don't want to take that for granted.
All right, I'm going to ask this question now. It's from a fan because it's super relevant. It's from Sock Therapy on Twitter. He says, "Who's stronger, Clint Frazier or Aaron Judge?" And I'll just go with who's got better power at the plate.
Aaron, man, like, come on, that guy just hits effortless 450-foot home runs.
Aaron Judge is 7 feet three, 350 pounds, solid muscle. I mean,
I'm almost, if I remember correctly, we did a weigh-in and a body fat percentage when we were in AAA. And I want to say Aaron was like 6'8", 6'7", 285 with like 12% body fat. And that is the biggest human being I've ever seen. I mean, I don't even know where that 12% came from. He doesn't have an ounce of fat when you look at him. He's huge.
Yeah, I mean, so he's a tight end in a baseball player's body. I mean, he belongs on an NFL field. That's what he looks like.
Yeah, when we were in Tampa, he was on a treadmill, and the way that the treadmill was set up in the locker room was it was behind the lockers, like the very back, because they're readjusting the weight room size. I'm pretty sure that minor league weight room is going to be like 5,500 square feet at the stadium. So they put a bunch of stuff like in the back part of the locker room, and he's running on the treadmill, and you can see his head and it's like his upper body over the lockers in the back. And I was like, golly, dude, this guy is huge. So
we have a really good idea that I think would be perfect for spring training. We're going to be down there for, I don't know, a week or so. I think we should do, I don't know if you remember, if you've even seen, not remember because it was way before my time, before all of anybody's time who's listening to this, but they used to have those home run derbies with like Mickey Mantle and with, you know, some of those old school guys, and they would do the home run derby, and then someone would go and they would do an interview, and there was nobody in the stands. They're all black and white. We want to do a home run derby with you and Aaron Judge, but do it with wiffle ball. I think it'd be perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, I can put on a home run derby. Don't worry about that. I might be able to hold my own in that category.
Oh, here we go.
So you would beat
Aaron Judge then. You would beat Judge in a home run derby?
It just depends on if we're – so Aaron and BP likes to make targets on the field. So he likes to go center field to right field in BP for home runs if you're going to do a home run derby. If he takes out the 500-foot home run I have to hit the center field in Scranton, I can beat him. If he makes me go to right field every time, I can't do it, dude. That guy can – he just has stupid power the other way. I think I can pull more home runs than him, yes, MVP.
Well, I guess
– I think if we're going Oppo, yeah, Tyler Austin's got to be in that conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Winning a derby that way.
So Tyler and Aaron would do a home run derby to opposite field, and I would just have my own to left field.
In what we're going to do, it's wiffle ball. It does not matter how the ball gets out. It just matters if it gets out.
Yeah.
Yeah, set it up.
Nice.
Perfect. Beautiful.
All right, I want to talk about the World Series. I know you were watching because I saw you posting about it. That's probably the craziest game, that Game 7, that I've ever watched, and I've been watching baseball for a long time. What were your thoughts on that game?
I was nervous, man. I was like, geez, like, I'm not even in this game. And I'm, like, thinking, this game is in a rain delay, and I can't, like, I'm barely breathing. But it was fun. I mean, I have a lot of relationships with the guys that were on that roster with the Indians. So to see them in that situation and, you know, I don't even know how to put it into words for them. It was very fun to watch because I had ties with people there and because I was with that organization. So to see the emotions that both team had, after 1-1 and one loss is shows you how much of your life you pour into that game. I mean, it's a heartbreaker. So I felt kind of heartbroken for the team, and I wasn't even in the game. So for me to kind of watch that game was awesome because I don't watch much baseball. I don't really care to sit down and watch a game. I mean, I play it every day, and I don't really have much interest in watching it outside of the season.
That's interesting. Derek Jeter was the same way. I remember reading something about him and compared him and A-Rod, whereas A-Rod would watch West Coast games after he was finished playing, and Jeter would go home and not even have a TV, never mind turn it on. So it's kind of interesting you say you don't watch much baseball.
So now you're comparing him to Mickey Mantle and Derek Jeter?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah,
not putting pressure on him at all.
Zero pressure.
You mentioned the rain delay, probably the craziest timed rain delay in baseball history, but apparently Jason Hayward gave an epic speech that motivated his team. Have you ever been a part of an awesome clubhouse speech, or have you ever given one?
I've never been a part of a professional one, but in high school we had some pretty gnarly speeches from some older guys when I was a freshman and sophomore, but obviously not on the same level of the World Series speech. But yeah, I mean, I don't think we could really compare to that. But, you know, it says a lot about Jason Hayward for the fact that his season probably didn't go the way that he wanted to, and he still rallied his team and let them know that they were the best team on the field at the time.
So Rizzo pocketed the ball, the last out. It's a historic ball, probably worth a couple million bucks. 2017 World Series, you catch the final out in the outfield. What are you doing with it?
I don't know if you watched the national championship when I was in it, but I actually threw the final out away. I threw it to a girl, so.
World Series is a little bit different.
I'm going to hold on to the next one if I do it. But I don't think Rizzo will ever sell that ball. He doesn't need the money, and I don't think I would throw that ball away. I think I would have a little more common sense next time.
Yeah, I think he actually gave it to Cubs ownership. I think I read that. So
yeah, that one's going to either you know some kind of a Hall of Fame or Wrigley Field in between bulletproof glass. So that one's going to a safe place.
All right, we got some fan questions. We got some more fun questions for you. First up, is the word ginger derogatory?
I think people think it is, but I don't really care. I think at this point in time, when I'm in the outfield or at the plate and people are calling me a ginger and think that it offends me, it doesn't. So not anymore. Maybe when I was 12 years old with a crazy temper, it would, but not now.
Yeah, I mean, you seem to be embracing it. I know you were, I saw one of the hashtags Red Thunder as soon as you were traded. So that seems to be like you're embracing it.
Yeah, I mean, the way that I look at it is my red hair is marketable and there's only I don't even know how many redheads in the big leagues, but it's I'm going to be that redhead laughing to the bank if Big Red comes through in the future.
That's awesome. Is that Red Thunder? Is that one that has stuck with you for a while? Is that what's the nickname that I don't know, for a lack of a better word, that you endorse, which is the one you like?
I had 100 in Scranton, man. No one called me Red Thunder. I'd never come out and be like, I'm Red Thunder. I just joked about it on Twitter, but in Scranton, they call me Cinnamon, Paprika, basically, or they call me Red, Ginger. I mean, anything that had to do with red, that was my nickname. But I don't know if I am going to take on Red Thunder because that nickname was not given to me by the Yankees fan base. It was the Indians fan base that called me that. So I don't know if I hold on to that or if I embrace the nickname that the Yankees fans want to give me.
Now we got to get something going. We'll start. We'll ask for some fan thoughts on Twitter and we'll get a good one for you.
There we go.
So about your hair, has the Yankees talked to you about cutting it? I know that's a rule with the organization.
So when I got traded, my hair had been growing out for over a year, I think. No, not even. My hair grows really fast. So the year was in September. So it would have been like 2 months ago that it was a year. So I hadn't cut it in almost a year. And when I did, I think I cut about 4 inches of it off and I knew that it wasn't going to last. And they came to me again and like, you need to cut more. So I think I cut 4 or 5 off again. So I've cut almost a foot of hair off. I mean, I'm at like 9 or 10 inches, I think. Now I do know that going into spring training, I've got to figure out a haircut that doesn't step on toes.
That's a good way of putting it.
If you're looking for reference material, just go back and Google Don Mattingly, because Mattingly actually had some decently long hair with the stash. So if there's a bar to be set, and Mattingly was the captain of the Yankees at the time, I mean, his hair was not short. He had some long hair when he was playing. So it's not, and this is when, you know, the boss was around. So that was probably the most crucial time when they were really abiding by those rules. So there's definitely a precedent set by Mattingly.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing with me is I'm not trying to individualize myself on that field. I'm not trying to be the guy that says, look at me. But in a way, I am embracing the color of my hair because it is a unique color. And but I am with a new organization. I do understand the policy they have. And I know how long it's been going on. I don't know the exact date, but it's been going on for a long time. So I'm not going to be the first guy that tries to fight that. I'll cut my hair to whatever length they need me to.
Yeah, that dates back to the Casey Stengel days. So you're probably not going to be able to pry them away from that. But do you remember Ben Gamel when he got called up? He had hair that was still pretty decently long. So I think you can get away with that.
Yeah, I think just the difference in mine and Ben Gamel's hair is mine is it pops out more. It's really big, man. It's bushy.
And you've got more volume.
Yeah, way more volume, and the color jumps out at you more. So that's the thing. I don't want to let my hair get bigger than my game. So I'm going to kind of harness that.
It is kind of a shame that Gamel got traded when he did, because we had a really good shirt. I don't know if you've seen it on our website, but we have a fan shop and a lot of different T-shirts and things. And we had one that was about to come out called Flow Bros. and it was beautiful. I mean, it was, we had both your hair on there, and it was a really good shirt. So it's a damn shame he got traded. Not only is he a great player, but he had some phenomenal hair as well.
Yeah. I mean, he was my roommate in Scranton, so it was fun to live with him. He's a really good guy.
So you talked about your red hair, your fair skin. Is it difficult playing an outdoor summer sport with that type of fair skin?
No, I mean, I get burned to a certain extent, but not crazy.
What SPF are you using?
I haven't worn sunscreen since I was a little kid. God. So, during spring training, I'll probably be rocking the long sleeves a lot just because that is.
Yeah, it's hot down there.
That is a hot area, man. So, but once the regular season gets going, I don't wear much sleeves on my arms. I mean, I like to kind of go without the long sleeves because I don't get burned that much.
See, Andrew, one thing I don't think you realize is that I have a lot of freckles, and freckles are in my family. Freckles protect you. They protect you from the sun. It's like having SPF on your body. It's perfect.
How would I realize that, Scott?
I'm saying you don't realize that. That's the thing.
I was reading a story today. It was like one of those Chuck Norris stories. It was talking about your workout routine. And it said at 14 years old, you did 142 straight push-ups. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
How many do you think you could do now?
I can't do 140. I haven't trained for it. I can do over 100 straight probably right now. I mean, I did 75 easy the other night. I actually just worked out for the first time, and I was pretty surprised at where I was at. So maybe I'll try to beat it one day. Maybe it could be a competition for myself.
Isn't it kind of showing off just doing 142 push-ups?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I mean, it was just it was a thing when I was in middle school. It was like a physical fitness test. So I was going for the record. I mean, my friend at the time did like 100 straight or something. He's a huge kid, just strong as can be. And I remember being like, I'm going to break his. So, I mean, I kept going and I somehow did it. I don't, that was at a lot lighter weight. I've put on about 40 pounds since high school. So
those are the Presidential Fitness Awards, right?
Yeah. I never got presidential though. I was
sit and reach.
I couldn't. Yeah. I never could.
Man, look at that. So we have something in common. Sit and reach was the only thing that would keep me away. I was so not flexible.
Yeah, it sucks.
I don't have a damn clue what you guys are talking about.
I knew exactly. Sit and reach is a tough one, man. If you can't touch your toes or beyond your toes, you're not getting that Presidential Fitness Award.
Yeah, well then I'm not either. Are you familiar with John Sterling's home run calls?
Is he the current guy?
Yeah, he's the radio broadcaster.
For radio.
Yeah, he has a home run call for everyone.
I'm not 100% with that. I don't know if that'll piss some people off hearing that. But all I know is I heard the guy that was saying Gary Sanchez is home run every day. So I don't know if that's the same guy.
Yeah, I think it was definitely him.
Yeah. Okay, I'm very familiar with that because I just watched all of his home runs tonight, actually.
Yeah, we actually put together a montage of all of his home runs. Just, he's an animal. But what do you think his home run call will be for you?
I don't even know, man. That's, it's going to be interesting. I think that's I don't know if he like preps that out.
Oh, he 100% does. I have a theory. He has an intern writing them for him.
Oh yeah. Then I can't even imagine what that's going to be. It's probably going to be something with my hair incorporated into it.
Yeah,
or a color scheme, like red goes deep or something. I don't know.
I was thinking of something along the lines of the famous boxing call with Down Goes Frazier. It might be
Deep Goes Frazier. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, I like that.
That might be a t-shirt idea too. Who knows?
Deep Goes Frazier. That's a perfect John Sterling call right there.
So we talked about it before we started recording, but we have to ask. Did you ever hear back from Jen Selter?
Yeah. I actually messaged her a few times. I reached out to her and I apologized to her just by saying I didn't know the amount of attention that this would bring to it because that tweet did blow up. And a lot of people said a lot of negative things about myself that were involving her name. But I reached out to her. I told her I was sorry, and she was like, no big deal. It's not that bad. And then she asked me for tickets in the front row of the game.
There you go.
So
you've got the in now.
I don't think she knew I was in AAA. So maybe I'll reach out to her and tell her I was just rehabbing or something, and I can get her tickets next year.
Yeah, wait.
Wait, these tickets say they're in Scranton, Pennsylvania. What?
Yeah,
what?
There's 100% chance I'm reaching out to her again when I make it. I swear.
Yeah, yeah. Just wait till you get the call up. But then put her with the Bleacher Creatures.
Oh, I'm gonna put her wherever she wants. She's perfect.
All right, so let's get into some fan questions. We'll do these pretty quickly. This one comes from Joe's McFly. He says, everyone has all these goals for you, but what are your expectations for yourself? And let's just say for 2017.
I think overall I want to be healthy. I was tired of rehabbing the same injury on my hamstring. Just kind of a couple of freak ways that I pulled it this year that I didn't expect to happen. So one, be healthy. Two, be consistent. And three, make it to the big leagues. I want to go up there and I want to help the team win. I want to be a part of the Yankees organization. I want to get out of a minor league jersey for once. So to play in the big leagues healthy and be consistent.
Next one is from Jason Grenda. Is at Grenda84. He said, where are you most comfortable defensively, center field or left field?
Center field. I'm more comfortable there. I don't have as much experience in left field, but my best guess is left field's probably going to be where I end up. I've spent a lot of time there in the last couple months of the season, so I don't know if that's just where teams or where the front office sees me playing or not. I can't predict that, but I know that what they were doing was trying to overall make me a more complete player, so I can play all three positions if that is ever a need by the team.
All right, this next one comes from Sammy DeBull, and he says, what is the strangest autograph request you've ever had?
Oh, God.
Anyone asked to sign their tits or something?
It's probably from him, man. I know exactly who that guy is.
No way.
Does he wear an orange wig?
77, that's his Twitter name. He follows. He asked me to sign a hockey puck, and I was really confused. But most of all, it's been just, will you sign 500 cards for me by people? Or can I follow you to your car? I mean, I've had some of the strangest stories, but he gave me a hockey puck. I know exactly who this guy is. He's a big fan. He's loyal, so.
What the hell is he going to do with a hockey puck signed by you?
I don't know, man. He's probably got
a whole closet full of hockey pucks signed by random people.
Did he ask you to sign a baseball or a glove or anything?
I signed a bunch of stuff for him already. I mean, I signed pictures. I think I signed a pack of Big Red chewing gum for him, baseball cards. But he's a loyal guy, dude. I mean, he comes to all the areas that I'm playing at, so I can't rip a guy for being a fan of me.
Nice. No, that's good. And he obviously set that question up because he knew you were going to ask it, and he knew he was talking about himself. Good for you.
He won it.
Yeah, Sammy, that was a win. Good job, man. Next one, I'm going to read two in a row, actually. They're pretty similar. This one's from Mark Andrew and M Word on Instagram. He said, what is your biggest change coming for you coming to the Yankees organization, good and the bad? And then what are the differences between the Yankees and the Indians farm system?
I think the biggest difference is the way that they expect you to act, in a way of meaning, like, hold yourself to a higher standard. So everyone in the Yankees organization is a very, let's be as respectful as we can, meaning like clean the face up, make sure the hair is good, run out every single ball the right way. It's just really holding them to the higher standard. And those were different things for me because I kind of got away from maybe not playing the game right sometimes when I was with the Indians. So a quick story is my first game at Instructs, I was 1 minute late to stretch and got benched during Instructs. And I was like, I cannot believe I just got benched at an Instructs game. And my thing was, I haven't done a team stretch in 2.5 years because you get to stretch on your own once you get to the higher levels. And And I didn't know that. So that was the standard that they held us to, was you have to be on time for stretch. And I got benched the first day. So
you're not going to make that mistake again.
No. I mean, it was just I think it was let's single this guy out, because I was the highest level player there. I was the new guy, one of the older ones. So it's whatever. I mean, I should have been on time. But I think the good and the bad was, maybe the bad was I tried a little too hard to impress certain people. You know, tried to let them know that I was there by trying to hit a 500 for a home run every single time. And that's not the way I should play the game. That's not the way I did earlier in the year. And the good is the fact that I'm still playing. I'm on a team that is very good. The team, you know, seems to really like me and has faith in me to be an impact player in the future. And the amount of guys that they put around me to be successful, I mean, the resources that they have are amazing. They're like no other. So I can't complain with either organization. They do things differently. One, you know, helped me a lot along the way to get to where I am now. So, you know, I love both of them.
All right, last question is from Alan Tobin, and he asks if you were aware of the Yankees situation when you were traded, and that situation being that they're building for the future. And did you ever think about where you might fit into that future?
I don't. What do you mean by that? Like, was I aware of their restructuring?
Yeah, restructure, retooling, rebuilding, whatever you want to call it.
No, I had no idea. I mean, I didn't know a lot about the Yankees wanting to kind of trend towards the younger generation until they made that trade. Then you're sitting back and you're thinking, these guys are serious. You know, they're trying to get back to all those world championships that they won before this. So, and the game is trending in a younger era. So, and one, dude, they have the money to go out and buy whoever they want when the time comes. So they can build a core of guys that are already in the system and build up from that, and then buy some, you know, potential key players. That's a good thing for them.
Yeah. And that's got to get you excited for what's to come in the next few years, because I know you've probably been joking about it when you're tweeting about the Yankees, you know, we're going to be celebrating soon. You probably were saying that in jest, but there's probably a little part of you that's also serious and excited about that.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% serious. These guys are good. You look at this lineup right now, and I think to myself, where am I going to fit in? Because all these guys are so good. I mean, the younger guys that are already there are really good. I mean, Greg Bird's going to be back. You know, the season that Didi had this year, Gary. You know, Judge is going to, you know, be healthy next year. Tyler's going to be good. It's just a really good group of guys, and the pitching staff is – in AAA that I was with was really good too. Like, you know, Chad Green, Severino, like Montgomery, all of these guys that they have coming up through the system. I mean, they have a lot of tools that they can, you know, use for their arsenal right now. So I do believe that this team's going to, you know, compete for a long time when everyone gets there.
Is this the conversation that some of you guys have about, now that you're in the organization, you do know the situation of what's going on? I mean, and I'm sure you have heard about the 20-year anniversary of 96. I mean, that team was very much structured similar to what you just described, where you build a core group of young guys in the system, and then the Yankees, with the power and the money that they have, are able to go out and find those free agents that fit very well. And honestly, that's how that 96 through 2000-2001 era was built. I mean, it was built from the ground up, and then they added those key players. Does that conversation ever come about with you guys as young guys, like looking around and just being excited?
You know, obviously everyone knows that, you know, we're gonna compete for a long time, and guys didn't really start to talk about that until instructs with me. At least I didn't hear many people talk about that. So the biggest thing for Instruction League was they kind of set the foundation of, we are going to be the best at everything that we do so we can compete for a championship. And, you know, they harped on it every single day. Like, I just remember I had never seen a lot of these guys, because a lot of them were like low A, high A. Some were double A guys and instructs. And we kicked everybody's asses, dude. I mean, it was not even it wasn't even a competition. I mean, the way that we walked to the field was like, we're about to come in and we're about to beat the shit out of y'all. And we did it. I think we lost two games in all of instructs, and the rest, I think we were like 14-2 or something. I mean, it was just the group of guys that we have. Everybody knows their town, and everybody knows that, you know, we're going to be playing in the big leagues one day. It's just going to be who's going to be on that field and how are we going to win.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, we know Yankee fans are excited for not only you, but all of the youth movement. We were, like I said, we were in the stadium that first day. Judge and Austin were there, and it was definitely electric. Clint, thank you so much for the time you've given. This was awesome. Scott, you got any last words for our man here?
No, I'm pumped up, man. Appreciate you you taking the time. We're looking forward to you to watching you grow and being a part of the team in the Bronx.
All right, guys. Thank you for having me.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it, and go Yankees.